Hello and welcome to Joe Talks Comics, the podcast where I talk with friends about the comics that we've been reading and enjoying lately, plus occasional solo episodes, and creator interviews. This week, a really fun creative interview here where Mighty Lee's Comics came back onto the podcast to join me to talk with writer Tony Fleece about his new series, which, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, should be starting today, Feral. From the creators of Stray Dogs, so like Trish Forstner, Tony Rodriguez, Brad Simpson, art and colouring. We're both, as we say in the episode, massive fans of the original Stray Dogs series, so I was very excited when Mighty put this on my radar and even instigated this conversation.
Yeah, I know. As always, it's great to have a chance to come back on and chat with you about what we're reading, but it's also really cool to be able to say, hey, dude, I was in the middle of a meeting and they kind of mentioned that this creator was open to interviews, so I sent them an email. I hope that's okay. And you're like, oh, well, what's coming out? And I was like, oh, you didn't realize. So it's nice being able to bring something to your attention like that, especially knowing now just how much you enjoyed reading it this morning and just how great of a chat we had with Tony. I had a bit of a preview conversation in a retailer Zoom meeting where I did get to ask some anonymous questions in the chat, and I got to re-ask some of those here so that folks can kind of get some of that insight that retailers got earlier on. I'm stoked for this book to get on shelves. I'm curious to see how the Stray Dogs fans treat this book as far as, you know, this is an ongoing versus the limited series. So it is a bigger commitment to those that are looking to jump onto it. But I do think that it is, as we say numerous times, it sets itself so far from Stray Dogs that obviously it's still the same creative team. But other than that, it's really its own new unique story.
Yeah. It was fun how we kept returning to the same like general points and just like revisiting them from like different angles and continuing the conversation that way through like, sort of zombie movies and comic books and the ongoing nature of this versus Stray Dogs and just like cats and dogs and the specific characters here, which we grew to love over the three issues that we got to read early. And I know that we would definitely recommend this. Go picking it up, supporting it, and especially because hopefully it can go on for a long while, especially compared to Stray Dogs. I'm excited for people to get to read it.
Yeah, I would say that without a doubt, Stray Dogs walked so that Feral could run. You know, I was surprised when I heard it was an ongoing. I think that whenever I first saw the solicitation, I assumed that we were in for something, frankly, I didn't have the highest expectations that it would be set aside differently enough, because I don't have a whole lot of work under my belt with this creative team. I've only read Stray Dogs by them, and I think everybody around the discourse was like, it's Stray Dogs with cats. But, you know, once I actually sat down and read those first issues, I was like, oh, no, it's not. It's just not. The danger's there. The cute animals are there. But as we say in the interview, that's really where the similarities begin and end. You know, this creative team's managing to we hear more about their process to kind of almost streamline the art side of this series, which was really, really fun to get into. And as always, it's interesting to hear these creators talk about, you know, how they're balancing something like a brand new ongoing amidst everything else that they're working on. But Tony had some great insight into his various ways of tackling his multiple projects. I think he said he's going to have four going by the time Feral's up and running eventually. So,
yeah, I think and hope that people will agree with me and with us that it takes the same magic from Stray Dogs and the same sort of creativity and brings it to this new and unique and exciting story. And I think just to set the stage, we asked Tony as early on to talk about the series premise, but just in case you haven't read the solicit and you have no idea what it's about, I'll read it, the first issue for you here. A new horror from the creators of Stray Dogs. Meet Elsie, Lord Fluffy Britches, and Patch, three indoor cats lost in the not-so-great outdoors during a nightmarish rabies outbreak. Without the humans to protect them, the cats rush to find their way home before they're eaten by the forest full of rabid beasts on their tails. Don't get bit. Don't get scratched. Don't become feral. And so, yeah. We didn't mention this in the interview, but I really like the detail of including that little tagline at the end of each solicit. I don't really notice that.
I'm so bad at reading solicits past the first issue of anything, usually because I just don't want to know what's going to happen until I'm reading it. So it's been a second since I looked at the original solicit, but I did really like that in part, the, you know, don't get bit, don't get scratched, don't go feral. And it really plays into, you know, with this series, it's going to have another lineup of amazing homage covers of classic horror movies and, you know, even more modern horror movies for some cases. But I really enjoy that solicit. I forgot that it had actually listed Lord having Fluffy Britches as a last secondary name. So whenever you said that, I tried to like mute my laughter through the mic so you could finish reading. Because I was like, wait a second, I didn't know that he had Fluffy Britches in his name. I completely forgot about that.
I know that's one of those things where I'm trying to like read it seriously and be like, no, I'm going to narrate it, and then trying to compose myself and pronounce it correctly. I was slipped up a couple of times there.
Well, and we promise that Lord Fluffy Britches is exactly as fun as he sounds.
Yes, we both fell in love with Lord, and it was fun to hear Tony's response to that, and also what like Tony brought up himself about that.
Yeah, and you know, we won't let too much slip out because you got a whole episode to listen to, but hopefully if you are on your way to your local comic shop listening to this, you'll grab a copy of number one.
Yeah, and I hope you enjoy the conversation and as much fun as we had recording it. So, Tony, welcome to the podcast. I know this is one that Mighty instigated for me. I feel fortunate enough that they were able to put it on my radar. So very excited for this conversation, especially as I know we both loved Stray Dogs by the same creator team, the same writer. And yeah, just excited to have you here.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for reaching out.
It's always a pleasure, especially after as soon as that retailer call, they mentioned, hey, you open a podcast and stuff. You said, send over an email. I was typing it up the second that it was said. So I was excited for the chance, especially after. I mean, at the time, I think I had only read the first issue. They sent us the first two for that call. So I've read a little bit more now, know a little bit more of what's to come. And I'm stoked for people to read this book, Tony.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, me too. We've been working on it for a couple of years now, you know, like just slowly putting it together. And now we're sort of up in like real production on it, you know, like we're working on issue 7 right now.
Nice.
Like different parts of the team are working on different books, but me and Tone and Trish are working on issue 7. And Brad, I think, is about to color issue 5. And then I still have to letter like 4, 5, 6, and 7. But it feels cool to be this far ahead.
I was about to say, y'all seem pretty set moving forward there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the plan was always to do it as an ongoing, and we were sort of waiting to see what the numbers were. Just to know if like that was of you know, man plans, God laughs type situation.
Right.
But the numbers for number one were pretty decent. We're trying to make sure that they don't plummet on issue. They always plummet on issue 2, but like we want it to be like a fall and not a disaster. You know, like a drop and not a complete explosion, bottom falls out type thing. You know, but I don't think it really will be like. I have no idea how the other side of comics works, the retail. I mean, I feel like I'm sort of more, like I talk to more retailers than a lot of my friends who make comics, but I really have no idea like about the choices that you have to make and the, you know, when it comes right down to it and it's like, I can get 10 X-Men that I'll definitely sell, or I can get, you know, 3 of this Boom book that I might sell, you know, I think I'm rambling, but that's
no, I totally get it. See, and being on the retail side for the last few years now, I work at a shop that was huge on Stray Dogs. We were still shipping across the country at that point, and we had folks that were ordering enough to get the ratios for each issue and stuff like that. So we powered through Stray Dogs. Every single printing was selling out. And so I'm excited to be in the shop and see how folks react to Feral, because I think for me and probably a lot of people, the defining moment for Feral is that first issue setting itself aside from Stray Dogs enough to say, you're not just reading the same story again.
Yeah.
This is, yes, there's cats in danger, and that They're cute and cuddly. That's the setup. It's horror with cute animals. But at the end of the day, Feral, and we've three issues for Joe and I in now, it has set itself well apart from Stray Dogs while still completely encapsulating what I think a lot of people loved about that series. Did you want to talk a little bit about what Feral is, kind of the synopsis-wise?
Yeah. So Feral's a story of three indoor cats that get lost in the woods in the middle of a nightmarish rabies outbreak. Like, that's the quick pitch. So it's basically like Walking Dead with cats, or like a zombie story with cats. But you're right. Like, we tried to make it as different as possible from Stray Dogs while still doing, you know, we wanted to give people the thing that they liked in Stray Dogs, but also make it something that they had to come back for because they didn't know what to expect from issue to issue. And like, having, you know, so many people read Stray Dogs that we could not just do the same thing again and expect them to, you know, tune in for issue four where, you know, the dogs or the cats all argue with each other this time. And then the, you know, then they find a terrible secret. You know, like, we had to do different stuff in the issues to make it interesting for us and also something that people would hopefully come back for.
Yeah. And especially it being an ongoing.
Yeah. That's what I was very curious about, because I was going to say, obviously, but if you're listening to this, you might not know, Stray Dogs was just a miniseries, just five issues.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the things that surprised me in a positive way, in the best way, that it wasn't ongoing. I was like, oh, curious. That was a really exciting. I wondered what the decision there was to tell a more expansive story than the one in Stray Dogs.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of... One of the main ways we went about trying to make it different was Stray Dogs was like a concentrated burst, like a tiny, a big story told in a tiny shape, you know? And so on this one, we wanted to tell a very long story about these cats, and sort of because cats live a long time. And I think the genius thing, I mean, Robert Kirkman has done a lot of genius things, but his initial spark of genius was saying that the worst part of a zombie movie is when it ends, because there's never an ending. It's always just like, well, we're done now, you know, like, that's right. We're done watching these people in their misery, like,
right.
The epidemic continues, but we don't have to see any more of it. And so, like, that's what people love about Walking Dead, was that they could just keep checking back in and see, like, well, how do they, you know, what new things could happen to these people. And so, I mean, we're not I didn't even finish reading Walking Dead. I got up to the part where he said, you know, where he was on the phone and nobody was on the other side, and he said, "We're the Walking Dead." And I had started having ideas about zombie stuff, and I was just like, I don't want to contaminate any, you know, like, I don't want to mix my mind up with the zombie stuff that he's doing here, because he was like hitting all the notes. But yeah, so us doing this, like, this version of it is, it's ongoing because it can be, and because, like, that's what's fun about a zombie story. Like, that's the thing that Kirkman figured out. And it feels like it's crazy that nobody else did it before that. I mean, I guess there had been like 28 weeks later, but that was around the same time. There had been sequels, like the Romero movies had sequels and they checked back in, but it was crazy that, you know, Walking Dead's the only thing that just goes on and on and on forever. I mean, it's still on TV, right?
And it's three or four different spinoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, the main series ended, and then they've just kept it going with spin-offs and things, and like the TV show. I haven't seen the TV show. I've read like the first couple of compendiums of the comic, but I just find it interesting. It's one of those things where the TV show was so successful that it like caught up with the comics, and they had to start thinking of their own things, and now they're just completely diverged from anything the comics did.
Like Game of Thrones,
which ended, and TV is still going.
Yeah. Yeah, I assume there are probably more episodes of the TV show than there are issues of the comic at this point, or there will be soon.
I'd say across series, because they had Fear of the Walking Dead while The Walking Dead was still happening, and that went for a few seasons. And now there's like, I think there's one with Norman on his own, and then I think there's one with Rick and Michonne, the ones who live or something like that. I just saw. I was like, oh, there's another series. I didn't realize that. So they've definitely, you know, milking that, and like you said, you can. That's the beauty of these zombie books, and I think that you nailed it with what Kirkman said. Like, you got to end it at some point, but what happens to those characters? What happens to Rick and Michonne after the Walking Dead comic closes? You know,
yeah.
the apocalypse is still going. It's not like they stopped dealing with that stuff. So it does offer that as a way. And, you know, having read the first two issues prior to hearing you mention it was an ongoing in the Image call, I was like stoked because in my mind I was like, oh, wow, well, there's only three more issues. This is going to have to wrap up fast. In my mind, I just had it pegged as the same as Stray Dogs. And so I was really, really eager to hear that it's going to be an ongoing. And having not actually read The Walking Dead, I don't have any long-form zombie stories. I don't think I've actually read very many zombie comics in general. So this is a lot more my speed, being that it's cats with rabies and touching on the heartstrings quite a bit for me.
This will be like your gateway zombie comic. Then you can get into the hard stuff after this. You know,
exactly.
Really disgusting shit after we give you the cute intro version.
I don't know. As cute as it can be, it pulls at my heart seeing little animals in danger. I'm looking at my cuddly little cats in the sunshine right now, and I'm like, please stay inside.
Sure. I mean,
that's
obviously like a trick that we play. It's like a narrative thing that we have that we can sort of pull out. You know, you don't want to become the book that they're just like, have you read this book? Every issue, they just murder cats.
They kill a cat like every month.
But it is sort of like being a survival story, like an infection story, a zombie story, like that. It, part of it is like all these people don't make it out, you know? So
no, absolutely. And we see one of the things I mentioned whenever I first read it was where in Stray Dogs, the horror really builds and a lot of the suspense and terror is happening off page. Feral takes no time at all getting right to the, like, rather, I would say graphic, honestly. Especially in that opening scene with the car crash. And it's like, oh, wow, this is already more brutal, it seems. And the danger is like, it's already there without it being that suspicious. Like, is this dog actually in trouble? What's going on with this poor little dog? What's their situation? Like, nope, there's no questions about it. These cats are in a horrible situation and they're immediately having to fend for their lives.
That sort of came from like writing it and developing it and trying to figure out how we get into like at what part to get into the story, because obviously like if we have these cats and they're in the back of an animal control truck and they're domesticated, so for some reason they've been taken by animal control, and so we sort of like tease out that story, but I could have started the story with like, you know, like a traumatizing scene of these cats getting ripped out of their house and put into this animal control truck. And, but I did want to get us to the forest as fast as possible, just because I wanted to sort of like have a first issue that felt like this is what this book is. And also leave like the way that Stray Dogs was a mystery about, is Sophie right about what she's saying? Like, is this guy really a killer? You know, are these dogs in danger? The mystery in Feral is more like what happened to the world, where, you know, what's going on outside of what these cats can see and what happened before, you know? And so there's a little bit of that. My least favorite part of any like horror thing or Godzilla thing or any of this is anytime you cut to the scientists and they're doing something, like in Dawn of the Dead, the movie, they would cut to like the TV station and they're like trying to figure it out. That actually, where all of Dawn of the Dead is good. There's no real shitty parts of that movie, but anytime you cut away from like the zombie outbreak part of it, it really has to matter. And so I just wanted to get us into that part as fast as possible.
I think the opening page of the book is essential and perfect for exactly that. It shows you what you wanted to know. Cool, these were innocent, precious cats, and something has put them in danger. You know, like I said, back of the animal control vehicle, in complete disarray, no clue what's going on. And, like you mentioned, I love that you say that. That's like something you really struggle with, this cutting to the scientists, cutting to the people that are like trying to figure something out rather than the action of the story. Because, you know, in the opening shot, it does have little tiny spoken parts and radio. So you're like, cool, these animal control guys are on some sort of mission, whatever it may be. But in one of the later issues, when you do have, you know, scientists or whatever you want to call them throughout the woods, they're speaking in a way that it's right there in the cat's earshot rather than it being, you know, cutting us to an office where people are addressing the pandemic that's going on. And it was really smoothly woven into where it didn't feel like a detour or even like exposition dump. It was, you know, as soon as you mentioned, I was like, well, no, no wonder he doesn't like that. He nailed it and completely alleviated that kind of ick that I know exactly what you mean. As soon as you cut off the action, like, okay, the human story of most Godzilla movies never hits. And so, you know, this isn't about the humans. You show that pretty outright with the devastation of the initial wreck.
That's the trick that we played in Stray Dogs too. And it's sort of like there's anybody that makes an animal book, you can do it one of two ways. You can do it the way we do it, where it's like the dogs are dogs, the cats are cats. Only thing different about them is that they can talk to each other. We can understand what they're saying, right? Like, I assume dogs communicate with each other. I just don't know what they're saying. And so that's basically the only like magical leap we make in these books, is that you can understand what they're saying. The other way to do it is like they understand what people say, or they, you know, can work computers, or they can, you know, like the more human stuff that you give them as like that's in their toolkit, the like stuff that it turns out they can do, it's like it helps, it moves the story along, but it also makes them less cat, and it makes it so that the thing that you get from people identifying with these cats because they see their own cats in them or their own dogs in them, you start to lose the more and more human you make them. And same with the story, the more and more time you spend with the humans, the less people care. Like if Stray Dogs was about people that got kidnapped by a murderer and they all were amnesiacs and were starting to figure out what, you know, what was going on, they just thought they lived together in this house. That's kind of interesting, but you don't care as much if it's people and it's not dogs, you know?
Yeah. That was something that, because often with like these interviews and things, I only get around to like reading the comics and things like on the morning of or on the day of the interview. And so it's one of those things where I was very excited to read the three issues, but I can tend to be a slower reader. So I was like, okay, I'm not sure how much time is it going to take me. But then I just flew through like all three issues when I like read that, the first issue and the second issue and onto the third. And yeah, like when you were saying earlier about just like starting it almost completely into the action, I thought that was executed really smoothly. I think as Mighty was saying, and about how, building on what you were just saying, we feel so invested in these characters. So it gets to the point where the humans do feel like an extra antagonistic force. We've seen it like animated movies and things, and of course like these great comics, and it's a really fun perspective to it. That it's not necessarily, it is like a unique and creative idea, but it just feels like it's especially executed in a unique and creative way.
Thank you. Since Stray Dog started coming out, was sort of the first time that I was like aware of like people reading my stuff or critiques of it. And the one thing that would always catch me, because I, you know, like I have read these books so many times by the time they come out, but people will go like, I read that in like 5 minutes or 10 minutes or something. And I'm always like, oh, I hope it was of value, you know? Because to me, it's like the idea that it's easy to read and that it's, that it flows is more important than the idea of cramming, you know, like a bunch of, like putting a bunch of work, you know, extra stuff in there to slow the reader down. Mm-hmm. It's something I think about. I'm glad that you enjoyed reading them, even though they went, even though they went pretty fast. We still, you know, we don't charge $5 for these things yet. So hopefully, you know, even though comics are more expensive than they've ever been, everything else is, and hopefully there's still a value in our $4, you know,
it's 15
minutes. Yeah, and I know you.
Yeah, as fast as it gets read, you're right there with it. The flow is what matters, and it flows well, and you care, and it doesn't need to have anything drudging it along, because, I mean, there's enough to take in with the art that you can flip through this book like two times and still find new stuff. I read this first issue twice. Once we got the third issue, I was like, I'll read straight through it again just to keep it fresh in my mind. And I think Joe nailed it. Like, it really does flow, but it isn't, like you say, it doesn't discount the read at all to me. Personally, I find myself more inclined towards books that are wordier and more dense and all that stuff. Yeah. I do really, really value books like this that you can get in and really just like immerse yourself in for that amount of time. And even if it is just like 5 to 7 minutes instead of like 10 to 15, it really can still like, I don't know. It feels weird to talk about like that because now I'm looking at it and like, yeah, you guys work your ass off on these issues, and to breeze through them seems like it could be a bad thing. But no, from my end, I think there's value on both ends of the spectrum when it comes to that.
And because, that was the thing. I feel like sometimes it's hard to say that about a book as like a compliment without making it feel like, oh, you just like not waste your money, but spend your money for like 5 minutes of entertainment. I know like writers... I remember like, talking to Alex Packmadel about this at Comic Con when he's been on podcasts, other podcasts and things, and like wanting to make sure if it's going to be 5 minutes, then making you sure it feels like it's something you can reread, as Mighty was saying, and revisit. And that was one of the other fun parts of it, as an addendum to what I was saying, that even though like I did like breeze through it at first when I was writing up like a quick advance review. So it was really fun to like go back and then like flick back through the PDF and like revisit the issues and properly like take them in more. And I feel like I've now like flicked through all three issues a few times by now, because if I think when you're invested in the characters, that's hopefully what you want to do, is to keep sort of going back through, whether that's to appreciate the art or take in more of the story or both, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the way I am with all my favorite stuff, is it, like, I'll feel like the characters are people that I want to visit again and again. And so I read Paper Girls all the time. I read In Paradise all the time. Like these books where the characters are so strong and you're just like, I just want to revisit that, like re-experience that thing that I went through with them. So, you know, I don't think I'm as good as those guys, but I would love to be making something here that people want to go back and check in with those characters. But I know people have reread Stray Dog, so I'm not just being all shucks for the sake of being Midwestern or whatever. but I'm the same in that way.
I mean, I've definitely read books that I breeze through that run shy on the value that would be like, I'm sure a lot of people are concerned about, but I feel like you definitely struck the right balance with Feral, because I already care about the characters. I cared about him when I read the first preview before Image sent out the secondary one before the meeting. I was like, wow, this is awesome. And like I said, it immediately sets itself apart from Stray Dogs. Not that that's to say get away, Stray Dogs, but like obviously you don't want people to pick up the first issue and be like, oh yeah, I read this, it's just with cats and I like dogs more, you know.
Yeah
that would be I think my biggest fear going into that as the creator is saying, are people going to be upset that I just changed the animals? Does it feel different enough? And right. I think that you guys established that right off the get-go. One of the things I figure it'd be a great detour into is talking about these characters, the main three house cats we're following around. You want to kind of give an introduction to those? That'd be awesome.
Yeah, so it's Elsie and Patch, who are like the older cats, and then Lord, who's a little bit younger and who's a more of a maniac. You know, I sort of thought about the different kind of cats that I've had or that I've been, you know, that I've been around. And, you know, there's those cats that are just like constantly keyed up and like always have the zoomies or, you know, will jump up and scratch you out of nowhere. And then there's the ones that are just completely chill and like to be by themselves. And then there's, you know, then there's like sort of like Patch. I think of him as like the friendly cat, you know, the one that's just like, he's cool to come hang around people and sort of like well-adjusted. I feel like the three of them, there's sort of a spectrum. Like Elsie, the way that she gets played out through the course of the series and the way that hopefully we've sort of set her up is that she likes to be like, she would prefer to be home and by herself and just in her spot, you know, and chilling. And Patch is more like, Patch gets along, you know. Him and Elsie have like conflict between the two of them. But they all, you know, have to live in this house together when they did live in a house. And then Lord, who is missing for a lot of the first issue, when he finally shows up, he's just like a ball of energy, and he's sort of scatterbrained and a little autistic, and just like has just like a whole thing going on. Like when he shows up, the the book, I think, really lights up. And I based him on sort of characters in movies that I love, like Mean Streets. There's like this archetype. There's a Wong Kar-wai movie that has it. There's Mikey and Nikki has it. There's an archetype of like, you know, street guys, and one of them is a real fucking problem. You know, one of them is just like, he can't control himself. He's always getting in trouble. And so I wanted to have that be the, you know, what Lord's character is that he's young, he's trouble, and but he's so much fun that he, like, you just want to be around him, you know?
He's Roscoe and Boondock Saints. And
yes, exactly.
I hear you. And the irony of that reference is kind of too tight, but I have to go back because you said something that made Joe and I light up with joy, in that Lord is a little autistic baby cat, and I am on team all cats are autistic, whether or not they know it in real life. It's just which kind they have, and he is pure ADHD. He's got that, like, zippiness, like you said.
Yeah.
And referring to him as a little maniac, it really got me, because I don't know that I would have called him a maniac, but he's like he's a little whirling dervish of energy, and it's he really does add a different element to this. It's not that he's just comedic relief by any means. Like, there's some immense danger in this first issue, and then by the time that Lord shows up, you know, he's just completely unfazed by everything that's going on. And he has this playfulness that you both want to protect and kind of like wind down, and like, hey, dude, you need to simmer the hell down. Like, you're worrying the hell out of me.
Yeah. I'm glad that came through. We love Lord is definitely my favorite character to write. And it's a little like Dennis, who edits, my buddy Dennis Culver is the editor on the book. He's a writer himself. He writes Doom Patrol at DC and a bunch of stuff, but he'll always catch me. He'll just be like, they're all just talking about Lord all the time. And I'm like, yeah, he's great. You know, what else do you want to talk about?
Have you seen the guy? He's perfect.
This guy's a ton of fun. So yeah, I'm glad that comes through. We also, I mean, I'm not going to spoil anything, but we are going to break your heart with this guy too, without doing the, you know, he's not Victor in Stray Dogs. Like, it's not the same kind of heartbreak, but the reason you want to have a character that you love that much is because you want to be able to, you know, put him in danger and put him in places that people get mad about. And so, but we're definitely going to do that too. So, well, you guys will dig it, I think. And sure, and fucking hate it.
Well, I remember that feeling. It was issue 3 or 4 of Stray Dogs, whenever that happens and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I hated you guys. I hated every last one of you. I was spiting your names, and yet here I am, asking for you to hurt me all over again, but with the animal I'm even closer with now. So,
well, we definitely, you know, as people, I feel like that's part of it. You know, like, you if something affects you like that, you want to come back for more of it, because we like to feel stuff, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's embarrassing to cry at the movies in front of your boy or whatever, but like, I remember those movies for much longer than I remember, you know, the ones where I was just like, yeah, it was good, you know. Right.
No, I totally get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so fun to hear you say that, because Mighty and I, we hadn't really talked about like our reactions to the book separately before this. So, but Lord is like definitely the one that just instantly stole my heart, and starting to hear Ebo sort of gush about him as well. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, there's lots of good Lord stuff coming. Yeah, Lord gets a lot of cool moments, and his story is definitely big. Issue 4 is a big Lord issue too. So yeah, he's gonna fuck up a lot. I have in the, like, on the bulletin board where I would like lay out the issues and sort of outline stuff, I have like several post-it notes that just say Lord fucks up, and I pop it in randomly wherever, you know, or just like, we need a little Lord trouble right here.
That's too good.
Yeah.
Well, and I see that issue 4 just hit pre-orders this week, out on June 19th, which is hands down my least favorite part about reading, you know, 3 issues in advance, is the weight of everything coming back out at the month-to-month pace and finally catching up. So knowing that 4 is that Lord issue that we're just waiting for, where it's like, okay, we've read the rest, we're getting caught up, getting to see the physical thing again, I'm stoked to see all the homages in person. I'm going straight down that B cover line again, and
nice.
It's fun to see all the different movies y'all are picking. I know I got a chance to talk to you briefly in the retailer meeting about that, but I think folks that don't have access to that would love to hear some of your thoughts going into picking out the right movies for these variants.
Yeah, well, so when we started, we were thinking a lot about just doing zombie stuff for as long as we could, and then it was like, all right, we'll do zombie stuff, and we'll do horror movies about cats. But then I love so many, like, I love most horror movies, or at least can sort of get something out of every one of them, you know, like even bad ones will have like something in them. I'm just like, that was cool though. Or, you know, it has to really suck for me to be like, that sucked. And so eventually it just ends up being like, well, we'll do all of the, we'll do, you know, homage covers for all of these different horror movies because it's an ongoing, and because we have like retailer covers, and, you know, like there's so many opportunities to hit all these. And the only sort of hindrance being we did so many of them for Stray Dogs already that we haven't wanted to just retrace our steps and do the same thing over and over again.
Right.
So generally, if it's one that I think, yeah, we've only redone one that we did on Stray Dogs, Trish and I. There's so many other covers that are drawn by other people that we're just like, all right, well, look, if it comes down to it, you know, I'll do The Conjuring or something because I didn't draw that one the first time around. Yeah, Trish and I are having a good time. Well, I'm having a good time picking up the horror movie covers. Trish doesn't really even like horror movies, so I just send her stuff, and then she just goes, okie dokie. And then just draws up the cover and sends it back to me, and then I ink it and color it. Yeah, we're coming up with a ton of them. I'll show you issue 5. I'll switch on my camera for a moment.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
See, you had mentioned one that in the call, but it wasn't done yet. That's fun to see. See, the one I really liked, you had just shown the, I think it was one of the incentives, was that Frizen you had shown that I saw people
post. Oh, yeah.
So that got revealed shortly after. I'm also a big fan. I appreciate a good ratio for the good art and the fun stuff like that, but I can never afford something like a 1 in 100. But that Night of Living Dead cover is, oh, chef's kiss. That one's damn good.
Thank you. So we had done Night of Living Dead for Stray Dogs as like a retailer variant. And that's the only one that we did twice, you know, because it was just like, well, obviously we had to do, you know, all the variants for issue 1 are Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, and Night of the Living Dead, but they're the second two are ratio variants. So
on the retailer side, it's interesting because I'm thinking back on all the ones that we sold, and I'm thinking about the most sought after that we dealt with in the shop. And I don't know if you have a gauge on that, but from my shop, we had probably the highest demand for the Crow
cover. Oh, yeah.
And what was the issue with that is that the printers were real rough to that book. So if you could get a clean copy of that book, you were like in great shape. So yeah. I was just thinking, because with the movie coming out and it being in wide discourse right now,
yeah.
What a great one to have potentially had. But I remember that one especially blowing up. But it's still so cool because even like, you know, the ones that get further away from maybe mainstream horror, I still think we're doing really well. I like the one that was for, I think it was issue 4 when you guys did for The Rope, if I'm not mistaken. I might be thinking of the wrong thing.
Was it Audition?
Yes, Audition. I don't know why I said Rope. That's what I'm thinking of. It's got the poodle on the front, and there's a...
Yeah.
That's the one.
And then, yeah, it's got that string with the blood coming off of it. Yeah.
I don't know why I said rope. It's the string that made me think rope, but yes.
I got there. Somehow rope got me there as well.
I'm glad.
Yeah, that's the other fun part is doing horror covers, because being a horror fan and going to like, you know, like when I go to a horror convention, I feel like a complete normie because I don't have like a jean jacket with like a Return of the Living Dead patch on the back of it. And like, I don't feel like out of place. Like I can tell that I'm there amongst my people. I just don't look like it. And so even though I look exactly like all of them, you know, maybe it's just my own self-hatred that I'm not, that I can't let myself fit in. But I, you know, like they all have beards. They all wear this kind of hat. They all have like the horror tattoos. And anyway, what I'm trying to say is, they love all the horror movies the same way I do. And so at a certain point, the B covers, they're for comic store fans, but what they're really for is for horror fans, because they'll show up and get like that Audition cover, or they'll be psyched about the cover that was for, you know, Lamberto Bava's Demons, or you know, like these weirder ones that we're getting to, because Feral's an ongoing, we get the opportunity to do a, you know, like a ton of weird ones, as well as hitting, you know, some of the mainstream ones that we haven't done before. Like, we didn't do any of the Nightmare on Elm Streets on Stray Dogs, and we're doing those now. And so it's fun to sort of like get in there and find stuff that we just sort of like haven't gotten to yet. Although we did so fucking many of them.
Well, especially when you take into account the retailer side, like you mentioned. But what I was going to say, that Nightmare on Elm Street, I think that's my favorite cover of the ones that are released for the main order, open order right. ones. Yeah. That I was so excited as soon as I saw that. And one thing I was going to mention, because we have a guy in shop that's like, if you see an homage cover, pull it for me. And I think it's been the last 2 weeks back to back, he sent me covers, said, hey, I can't figure out what this is. And yeah. I went on the hunt trying to find these homages. And it looks like AWA's got Ribbon Queen that just finished off.
Yeah.
And they had one for initially. I was like, I feel like I recognize this. I was guessing all the different cannibal movies I knew. And sure enough, it was none of those. It was for Black Sunday. And so hunt of being like, what am I looking for? And I mean, I went through so many pages, and the amount of times I saw the Black Sunday poster and thought, that's not quite it, but didn't click on it, it drove me nuts when I found it. The other one was just this past Wednesday, the Wednesday before, Washed in Blood number one had I slapped myself when I realized that I was missing it. But they had a Hellraiser homage that was pretty sick. Pretty casual, not fully scoped up like a poster like some of them that I really like. But it's so fun to see the array of books that are doing the homages, and how even if people aren't reading these books, they are hunting down those homage covers. There can be people that will probably pick this book up and say, I don't care anything about what's happening inside. There's some folks I'm sure that are going to pick it up and never read the inside, which is a shame to comics, but that's just kind of the nature of collecting sometimes, I feel. And to be able to, you know, reach those folks while also still giving the readers something to be excited about, I just think it's cool, because there's going to be people that are reading it alongside. They're like, oh, this homage is perfect, or the same exact way. I remember whenever Stray Dogs was still coming out, and it was like every week at the shop, the next like printing would come out for whichever issue was being reprinted that week. And there were some weeks whenever like a whole slew of them would come out. And it didn't matter how many copies people at the shop had of the original issues. They were coming back and getting the consecutive printings because of those damn covers. And I think when you can land the balance of people wanting the covers with the fact that people get tired of too many covers, you've struck the balance, my friend, because I don't know that there's any book I can think of that managed to sell more of the consecutive printings than Stray Dogs at our shop. It was unreal, but people really, really show up for these horror variants. So it's always fun to kind of look behind the scenes and see what that is. One I thought was like interesting was that like Megan felt like slightly out there, but now talking to you about Elsie's character, it feels a lot more in line.
Well, also just like it's a that poster cover. Rules.
Sometimes works really well.
It comes out of nowhere where it's just like, that is a rad poster though, and so that we should do that. I mean, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street isn't real zombie-ish or cat-like. No,
absolutely,
either.
But it looks great. Exactly.
Yeah.
No, but it's fun to see that range, because you can do Night of the Living Dead on one, and you can do a movie from as recently as Megan, and it'd still be fun to see.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't always have to be the obscure ones.
That's a weird superpower that I have, is when I see other homage covers, and when I'm doing them, I'm very critical of if they don't do the logo right, or if something looks off or something. Like I have a real, like, if it's not right, it's wrong approach to these things. So
you can tell there's care into them. Cause like I said, there's other ones where I think one of my favorite homages in the past few years is actually one of the most subtle ones I can think of, but the clearer the homage is, the more satisfying I feel it is. There's something that's cheeky about Masquerade number one by Kevin Smith having the character from Action Comics one that's holding his hat on, like running in the bottom corner.
Right.
Having that in the front of that book that has nothing to do with it. It's not even listed as an homage, but it's a casual little, like, it's right there. That's fun. But whenever, like you say, you see some of these where it's like, okay, you kept the comics trade dress, sure, that doesn't look that great against this book that's supposed to look like a Goosebumps book or something like that.
Whenever I see that, it all, like, if the colorist wasn't on board or if the designer wasn't on board, you can always just tell that it's just like not everybody was on the same page with what they were doing on this.
Yeah. And
that's the great thing about doing books at Image is they, you know, like, we're in charge of our book for the, you know, almost entirely. Like, they don't have any editorial, you know, they don't say like, don't do this in the story or your covers should look more like this or whatever. The closest that anything came to that was like recently they hit us up and they said, hey, we're trying to do like a standardized trade dress. So could you do this with the logo box? So if you like, when the book shows up in stores, it will look slightly different than the solicitation image because we rejiggered the way that the trade dress is. But that's it as far as like anybody telling us what to do. So on those homage covers, you know, it's basically just me and Trish making them. And so, you know, there's nobody on the team that doesn't know exactly what we're trying to do. And so she draws it exactly like it's supposed to look. And then I ink it and color it up. And, you know, it stays on message.
That's awesome. Something I don't think I even thought about because I don't have the physical issues in front of me or anything, but for those credits on the front of like the on the front of the covers whenever it's posted, are those always names that are involved in the book, or do you throw in like casual shout outs in there?
No, I think they're always names that are involved with it's everybody that works on the book, and then if it's like a short, like older posters just have a few credits on them,
right?
And then newer posters or like modern posters have, you know, everybody's on there, the production company and the, you know, the cameraman.
Exactly.
And so on those, then we'll use like the Image office staff or like the Image executive staff or whatever, you know, Todd McFarlane and Robert Kirkman and stuff.
Nice.
So, but yeah, it's all people that are involved with the book in that way.
It's just one of those things. I was like, you know what? I didn't even think about that until right now whenever I was thinking about just the exact – because that was the thing with the Ribbon Queen Black Sunday homage is if I would have clicked on the Black Sunday homage, I would have seen that the font and the lettering was exactly the same.
Right.
And it's stuff like that where, cool, there was enough change that it threw me off. But if I would have looked at the lettering at least – it was an immediate tell.
Yeah, so, I'm looking at it right now.
It's a pretty cool cover. It's a wicked homage, but I saw it and I was like, oh, that's one of those like 70s, 80s crazy cannibal movies or something. But no, to be fair, I don't know what Black Sunday is. But
it's a Mario Bava movie. So Stray Dogs number 4 was a Demons cover that was by Lamberto Bava and Dario Argento. And Lamberto Bava's dad, Mario Bava, is sort of like the father of like gothic horror in Italy.
Oh, right on.
And he made this Black Sunday.
Cool. See, I love that kind of stuff. I'm glad you have this wealth of knowledge to just dip into.
The Ribbon Queen, they did a Hereditary cover too. We're definitely going to do one of those at some point. I love that movie.
Yeah, I was like, I just saw a Hereditary cover, but he sent me that one too because he didn't know that Hereditary cover at all. I was like, oh yeah, no, I know that one immediately, but spent a day looking for that Black Sunday one.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that being hard to figure out. I don't know if I would have known it was Black Sunday immediately, but I would have known where to start looking.
Right.
Oh, they did a 30 Days of Night too. That's brutal. Man.
All
right.
I need to look at all of them because they had quite a few and they were doing some cool ones. I saw that it was Black Sunday. I was like, that's a movie I've never seen, but what a cool thing to pull from. One of those more obscure ones where it's not that obscure because like you knew exactly who made that movie kind of thing.
Yeah, these are cool. They're doing a good job. Definitely the designers are doing good over there on these Ribbon Queen covers. So what I'm a little worried, I don't think we're going to have the same, you know, necessarily like up to fifth printing issue with Feral that we had with Stray Dogs, just because our orders were stronger on this book. We may have reprints. I don't know. I don't want to jinx anything. It's nice to have reprints, but I just think about how when that book was coming out, I didn't have five other or four other books that I was working on at the same time. And so when Image would be like, we need, you know, there was that one time where they reprinted every issue. They did 1 through 5 and we did 2. We did The Crow and a different cover for issue 5 as well for the reprints. And we just had to crank those all out in like 4 or 5 days. But I had 4 or 5 open days to just do it. So it's going to be hectic if that sort of thing happens again. It'll be a good kind of hectic, but
right. And I suppose that's one of those times where it's good to have you working on issue 7 while folks are finishing up some of the details on 5 and such. And, you know, it's, I always like hearing about that because it frankly, it stresses me out whenever I see folks in the industry posting like work in progress shots for something that's going to be out in like a month. I'm like, how do you work on this timeline? Is that just like the norm? And so hearing some folks more recently talk about, no, we've actually had some of this actually already written out and come into it better set up for future releasing and stuff like that. I think that's the way that makes more sense in my mind, but it's always fascinating to think of that because that's not something I would have thought of. In my mind, it's like, cool, you had variants that you put together that you decided not to use yet, and so maybe you pulled those from the back of the thing, finish them up for those second printings or whatever, consecutive printings, and you know that I'm sure that is stressful, busting those out in a few days on top of everything else. But because I know you also have it's Uncanny Valley coming out, Local Man's still coming out.
Yeah.
What else are you working on right now?
Army of Darkness Forever is still coming out. It's nice. 7 FOCs on Monday. And then I'm working on a Marvel thing too
that isn't
on
yet.
Mm.
But yeah, it's it's way too many. Local Man is up and running, and so it's sort of like Tim and I have the like we know how to make that book, and so and something like that's definitely one where if I were to post work in progress, it would be like, doesn't that come out very, very soon? and then Uncanny Valley, we don't have as much done as we have of Feral, but that's also just because it's a whole different system. Like, you know, there's editors and Boom has a whole, you know, they do, you know, they're in charge of that. I just write the scripts on that one. I think we were sort of like overly prepared for Feral because we just wanted to make sure that it was, you know, it's all us as far as the who's in charge of producing it. And,
right.
And nobody tells us when it's due except for when it's due to the printer. So we have to I think we probably overshot and made a bunch. But I'm sure a lot of that time will get eaten up with I'm going on this like sort of pseudo tour of signings and conventions and stuff. And then, you know, all this, like so much goes into releasing a book, this type of thing, talking to people and talking to retailers. And so, yeah, we're working on issue 7, but issue 7, it's bottlenecked right now at me because I'm so busy doing all the other stuff involved with putting the book out.
There's always a point where eventually, you know, oh, we caught up to where we were caught up and now we're on that schedule.
Yeah, we're hoping not. I think we've got enough socked away. I think the issue 3 is due on like the 8th. And that's all finished. We're going to do today, actually, the editor's coming over and we're going to do like last looks and, you know, sort of like tweak things and make sure it all reads perfect. And then, so then we still got 4 others after that, that we're in pretty good shape on. So eventually we'll get caught up, but I'm hoping to, you know, Army of Darkness is only 13 issues. So I'll be done with that, you know, by summertime. And then the Marvel thing is only 3 issues. So that's not a huge, problem. And, you know, Uncanny Valley is either 6 or 12 issues. So eventually, like if things go well, you know, eventually I'll just be able to sort of like have my head in Feral all the time and just, you know, focus on that. And then whatever new thing I decide to complicate my life with.
Yeah. So I know we talked about earlier the idea of having these like zombie stories that go on for quite a long time, but with that in mind about like your current workload, is there I've lost the word to mention what I'm talking about, but is there like a defined length that you have in mind for Feral, even if it's like a very rough sort of length? Are you sort of seeing where it takes you?
I've been saying like 50 or 60 issues, but I mean, honestly, it could really go like it could be whatever. Like, we know what the ending is, we know what these characters, where they sort of get to, and we know a lot of the things that happen to them in between, but we have left a lot of room to sort of improvise and go down different paths and go on journeys and stuff. When we wrote Stray Dogs, it was very tightly plotted, and obviously you read that, like, you know, at the end of it, it's definitely over. And with this one, you know, it's just like we said, like there's no ending of a zombie story. And so it's much more loosely plotted out. And and we have, you know, we love making it. And so the idea of like, well, what if we just take, you know, for a year, go follow this character over here and see what happens over there and just really stretch out and sort of like make this world as big as we feel like. It's a very tempting, very exciting premise, like an exciting idea. I'm definitely overworked, but making Feral is not the overworked part. That's, you know, it's all of the things are like a real joy to make. It's just doing all these joys at the same time is getting a little too joyful, you know?
Right. I think there's something really exciting about the idea of these long form indie series that we've been getting over the past of 10, 20 years. I mean, some, the ones that spring to mind, things like The Walking Dead, which we talked about, and Invincible, and Saga, famously within the comics community, is in the 60s and still going over 10 years since it started. And I know that a couple of me and Mighty's favorites, books like What the Other's Place From Here from Matt Rosenberg and Tyler Boss, mm-hmm. and Night from Wyatt Kennedy and Luigi Fomazano, which I feel like when asked about the length of their series, I feel like they've given a slightly similar response, where it's like they know there's a defined ending to it, but there's a lot of room in the middle to improvise it, as you said as well. And I think that is just, this is something that generally really exciting about that, the idea of that we can like buy into a like serialized story. Like there is like an end of mine. It's not just going to go be like mindless and get to the point where it should have ended 50 issues ago, but just all the, then into that idea of like picking these up monthly over the defined time, and then after it's done, like people like binging the whole thing, so you're sort of just getting those different methods of comic reading. Is just a lot of fun, I think.
And with how quick mine reads, you know, if we get to 50 issues, that's like an afternoon, right? You can just crank through that thing.
If it makes you feel better, Tony, I read through Barry Windsor Smith's Monsters in one sitting, and I don't know how long it took. I just opened it up one afternoon, and I was done later that afternoon. And that's 35 years in the making, and I'm sure he'd be pissed if he weren't. I read it that fast. But it didn't take anything away from it. That's the thing. You know, some of my favorite books, I can read it in an afternoon. I read Middle West at the beginning of, I think it was 2023, the start of the year, with Middle West in one sitting. And I think that there's something sincerely exciting about knowing we can look forward to, like Joe said, picking this up serially. And one of the things I hear a lot in the shop, even just this past Wednesday when I got to swing by, folks want a book that they can stick around with for a bit. You know, there's a lot of stuff coming out. There's a lot of amazing minis out. There's so many that it's overwhelming at times. And I think we're at a point right now where I know myself personally and a lot of people I've spoke to are really craving some of these books that are promising to go on for a bit. And, you know, whatever that may be, knowing that you can stick with a book for a couple of years versus, you know, a few months, that is pretty substantial. And, you know, some books will do that where it's like, hey, we got 6 issues and we're releasing them bi-monthly or quarterly even. And you still kind of get that feel of like spending time with that book, but it's not quite the same. So having this series as an ongoing, I think that was the thing that like perked my ears up the most when you mentioned it in the retailer call, because it's just exciting. Like Joe mentioned some of my favorites, like, you know, Knights and What's the First Place From Here. I love these books that I can stick with for a long period of time. You know, I think of some of the other long form I'm reading, and Department of Truth is on its way back. And, you know, thinking of a book like this, and like, you know, you're caught up now, but there does reach that point where like, hey, we know where we're taking this story, but we've also all picked up other series along the way. It's, you know, 2 years in, we need a couple months off or something, you know, and it doesn't have to take that long, obviously, but you know, stuff like that gives you time to let people simmer with it, let new readers find it. I think that's one of the things I'm excited for, is this is a book that even if folks find themselves trade waiting, I think that if they were to read the first trade come time for that to come out, they'll be ready to pick up issue 7 or 6, whichever. I don't remember where you said the arc caps off.
Yeah, 6.
Yeah.
I hope you're right. I definitely, that's the way we're making it. You know, we're doing these stories as arcs, as, you know, like a volume that you can read. And this is the, you know, the next issue is definitely about this adventure that they're on. And then the next one after that's about this other thing. So, I love the idea of people and talking to retailers, like I have, like they want issues that people come in for every month, you know, like the way that people would come in for Buffy, or the way they would come in for Saga, or the way they would come in for Walking Dead, you know. And so hopefully, you know, it's aspirational, but hopefully we can be that sort of thing for, you know, for shops, and also just for, you know, for our own, you know, for this series to continue and to continue to do well. The idea that hopefully people will have to come back and read more of it. And I think, you know, just knowing what happens in every issue that you haven't seen, like, the if you like these, it the good stuff starts to happen at issue 4. So I can't wait for you guys to see what happens. And feel free to message me in like a month or so if you can't wait, and I'll have issue 4 lettered, and I can send it to you.
That's the first time we've been offered that, and I'll be damned if I don't take you up on it later. I'm itching, especially if you said it's the Lord issue. I'm really eager for that one now.
Yeah, there's a lot of good Lord.
And that's the thing that I thought I really liked when I reached the end of issue 3, because you mentioned how like issue 6 is the whole arc, the full trade. But in terms of, and I haven't really had, not working at a comic shop or anything, I haven't really had much experience of just being able to read like 3 issues in advance like this. But I thought this was particularly a good hook in terms of, especially if it's going to go, there's only like the first 3 issues of like a longer saga.
Yeah.
That like end of issue 3 is like, oh yeah, I can see how, as you're saying, like it would start to heat up from there. Interesting, because if it was like, we talked about how like the first issue sort of jumps straight into the action, and we do get lots of nice character moments scattered among the first 3 issues, but I think it's going to be interesting to see like as they really start to set it in, and as we keep mentioning, as this like zombie movie actually starts to get to sit in it for a while and see what that does. Yeah,
thanks. I mean, yeah, I know what you're talking about in issue 3, and definitely when you read the first 2 issues of it, you're going like, oh, I get what this story is. I mean, I know what they're headed towards. This will be a long journey for them to get to X, you know. And then in issue 2, it's like, all right, here you go. So hopefully from there, you're just like, well, I don't know what the fuck they're going to do, you know, like, and Ben, it's hard to talk in abstract about this, but, you know, in issue 4, they go to the thing that they find in 3, and then, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, that we did that intentionally because we knew that we were setting up expectations by just doing this type of story that, like, you know, in issue 60, they find this thing, you know, and then finally we did it, you know. And so the idea of like, no, this is its own thing. It's its own big story like that. And so yeah, hopefully that works for people. We'll see. It sounds like it worked for you.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of, like, I only read the first, I think, 4 issues of Void Rivals from last year, like Kirkman and DiFelici from Skybound.
Yeah,
and that felt like a similar thing where, like, the premise that's set up, because, like, naturally people didn't really know much about it apart from their solicit, and like the whole reveal that it was tying into the new Energon universe, like G.I. Joe and Transformers, yeah. But the first few issues were like, oh, they're stuck on this planet, and it's like, oh, is the series just going to be with them getting off the planet? And then they managed to like get off the planet quite quickly. And then it feels like the first few issues that I read were sort of like that, where you think there is like a setup for a longer premise, and then they sort of get through it quite quickly. And it's just like, okay, so what is this going to be? And I'm excited to read on with that series. But yeah, I just thought that was a fun thing to bring up.
Yeah, I'm glad you caught that too. I think you're gonna dig issues 4 and 5. They're definitely, like, just because of how contained Stray Dogs was, we're really interested in showing as many different places and as many different you know, situations where, like, you know, in the first arc it looks like a lot of forest, but, you know, 2 arcs from now it may look completely different where these cats are, you know, like they really are gonna go on a journey. And so, I feel like I got lost. Oh, what's cool about that is the way that we make this book is slightly different than Stray Dogs, in that Tone Rodriguez and Trish Forstner are doing the art basically together now. Whereas on the first one, Tone would do tight layouts, and then Trish would, you know, draw over everything and ink it and do her own thing on top of it. And this one, where Tone is literally just drawing backgrounds, like that's his whole job. And so it's almost like animation, where, like, every page now has just like these fully rendered detailed backgrounds, and then Trish's job is to draw the characters and do the acting. And and so with like having that as a tool that we have now, I know that we can do, you know, like if we want to take them into the city, if we want to have them get locked in a mall like Dawn of the Dead, or if we want, you know, anything, we can literally take them anywhere, because there's a member of the team whose job is just to draw these environments.
I feel like that upped the stakes a bit and made it feel even more intense than it did, because I think there was a certain point when reading the three issues where I sort of realized that like the animals themselves are very sort of like cutesy and like that Disney style, but then like you look at the backgrounds and the forest and the humans, and it's a very like rough and like gritty and more textured. And I'm like, oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah,
that's interesting to know.
In fact, that like adds a different kind of streamlining to the process that I've never even like considered. So
yeah, right.
Just even imagine how that laying out looks.
It is a very different process. It was different when we did it on Stray Dogs too, and then I'm doing Local Man at the same time, and that's its own different like I have a bunch of weird different processes for making comics going on. And then I'm, you know, like I do stuff like Army of Darkness or Uncanny Valley, and those are literally just, you know, I write the script, I send them to an artist, and they knock the shit out of it, and then I go back to working on something else. So I'm making a bunch of different comics in a whole bunch of different ways right now. It's fun because everyone is its own, you know, unique thing.
Keeps things a little bit different, you know.
Yeah.
It keeps them from getting monotonous, I'd imagine.
It sure does. I mean, I don't know if anyone from the outside would look at my world and my life and say, like, that is not monotonous, but
well,
you know, on the micro level here, inside my house and my studio that's in my backyard, things are very varied and different all the time. It just looks like I'm sitting in the same place doing the same thing.
Sometimes
yeah, because that
things account like that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what I think like really impresses me about sort of ongoing comics, is that like monthly grind that it can turn into, at least if you had like the miniseries as sort of like a dedicated project, but you're like trying to put out these like comics, especially the really sort of like creatively unique and special ones like Knights and Thurver's Place, like I mentioned, and that was something I was talking about in my review of the first issue, where keeping that same magic from Stray Dogs, like what made it so special, but like bringing it to this completely new environment, like you were saying at the beginning, it's something new and exciting, but with that same sort of appeal. And I know we sort of talked very generally a lot about like the ongoing things, but are there any specific struggles with having this much more long form thing with like the pacing? Or because what I found interesting with like even with the environment, Stray Dogs, for the comparisons to that, is very claustrophobic with like, how it's written. But then there was a part of me that was like, actually, Feral is almost just as claustrophobic, even though it's in a like more expensive environment. You think it wouldn't be as claustrophobic naturally, but I think it really is, and that's just the testament to the tension that you build up.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the case for both of those books, is we're writing characters who are in fight or flight all the time, right? Like I think about what it would be like to write, you know, like, and we will eventually get there, but like to write the issue of Feral where they are relaxed somewhere and they can actually behave as cats behave, you know, for a little bit, or, you know, as cats in repose or whatever behave. But yeah, in both Stray Dogs, as soon as the plot kicks in Stray Dogs and in Feral, like these animals are always, you know, have the hair on the back of their, well, I guess on their backs, standing up because they're always in danger. They don't know what's, you know, behind them or what's around them. So that is probably one of the stressful things about working on this, is keeping that up all the time and finding ways to make it different and finding ways to make it also like not uncomfortable to read, you know, because you're at a certain point you are putting these characters in such a bind that, you know, like if somebody did sit down and read 50 issues in a row or something, you don't want them to just be like, god damn, this is uncomfortable, you know. You want you want there to be moments of levity or moments where you get a breather, or, you know, so it, like that's the tricky part is figuring out that balance and also, you know, keeping the whole thing moving and, you know, staying in front of, you know, as the writer, and I do the thumbnails for it too. I have to, if I get caught up with everyone else, then the whole machine stops moving and waits for me to start moving again. So I have to, the tricky part is also staying out ahead of it too.
In terms of development, you said this has been kind of brewing for a few years. Did Feral predate Stray Dogs in concept?
Oh no.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a reaction to Stray Dogs. We knew when we were working on Stray Dogs that we wanted to do a follow-up and we wanted to do it with cats, but that was pretty much it. And then it was a matter of, like, you know, thinking through the, like, is it another serial killer thing? Is it, like, something else? And then, you know, once you start considering, like, all right, well, break it all the way down. Stray Dogs is, like, a take on the serial killer genre, like, seen through this point of view. So let's take a different point of view and let's take a different genre and see and try and figure out what works best for that. And then developing characters and figuring out how cats are different than dogs and how the cats, like the characters that we invent, how they fit together and how they get along and how they don't get along and all that type of stuff. And so, yeah, it's definitely like that's what the development time after was figuring out the way to do something differently. And also, like, I mean, because there's bigger different things too, you know, there's the cats don't have the memory problem. The cats, there's some sort of like spiritual thing going on. There's some sort of, you know, like the narration is different. Like it's just figuring out a different way to do this so that it feels new to new readers or old readers coming back.
Now, flipping through the second issue without dipping into spoilers, I think you'll know what I'm talking about. When it comes to, you know, staying topical with any sort of comic that's coming out at any given time, oftentimes we see human characters dealing with very timely struggles that are in the real world for humans.
Yeah.
In issue two, you take on, again, I don't necessarily need to talk spoilers, but you take on more of a side where it's like, look, this is something that cats have to deal with that we like to make a statement on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So when that comes into play, what's that been like for you as far as, you know, it's got to be somewhat drastically different, I would think, than trying to say, okay, well, what parts of real world do we put in for humans versus cats?
I don't know. I mean, it's basically just looking at what you have to work with, right? Like that thing that you're talking about is the thing that is an option for cat owners, and that it is, and sort of, you know, some people it's like a necessity, you know, and some people it's like they couldn't even imagine. So it's, there's a whole spectrum there. But also for us, it's just the idea of like, all right, well, what does that do for our character, and how does it impact what they like plot wise, where they can go, and also where they came from? Like, that was the thing that like, just from talking to people about their cats and talking about like different, you know, like a friend that had a rescue cat who had that thing. And right. So then it's like, all right, well, that's interesting, you know, and that will continue to come up, the idea that like because these are domesticated cats that are in this situation, a lot of the time it's like, all right, well, they're all different. You know, some of them are neutered. Some of them are, you know, some of them have a little bell on their collar and they make noise when they run around, you know, and like, that's not something that they can, you know, control. Some are blind, some are deaf, you know, like we have these, like all cats have a spectrum as large as humans have, as far as like differences, and there's different breeds of cats and how do they behave different? How do like stray cats and outdoor cats, you know, we meet some of those, and how are they different from the house cats? So yeah, that's it's all just like stuff that you can use as character and as plot.
Right on.
Yeah,
because that part really like struck me when I got to it. I was like, damn, look at this. This is because it transcends the book from being just a book about cats experiencing a zombie-like apocalypse. Yeah, to me, it grounds the book in something greater. And offers a chance for the book to, you know, say more than what it could have said otherwise.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that that was a like my intention. It was really just a thing that we stumbled on that we were like, "That's great."
It's great. That's the thing. Stumble as it may be, like it is. It was so perfect. As soon as that scene happens, I'm like, "Oh Lord!"
Yeah, yeah.
You know. So it hits well, and it gives you the opportunity to show these cats back in a different environment. You know, I think that's one of the things you mentioned at the beginning that sets this aside from Stray Dogs, in that we're not spending enough time with those dogs to necessarily dive into those backstories. That's why we got Dog Days, right? With these little samples of letting people get to know these people. With this ongoing, you now have the opportunity to, you know, keep that a mystery for now. You don't get to know anything about their home life until you decide to share it with us. And I think that that's a really strong angle to have for this book in terms of keeping things interested, keeping us vested, because, you know, the second anybody starts to feel like, this just feels like cats going through the zombie apocalypse, you can, you know, throw it back to say, well, this is what they're used to. Do you remember what these cats are supposed to be experiencing as domesticated cats and stuff like that? No, I'm so excited to see where this series goes. I was definitely nervous putting cats in danger because I'm a sensitive soul.
Sure, yeah.
Even like the visceral, because I will say it's a lot more graphic than Stray Dogs. But even the most graphic scenes, you know, wild animals attacking wild animals, it's easier than watching a human abuse an animal. It's not the same impact as watching a human attack a cat if it's a wild cat attacking a cat or a fox attacking a cat, stuff like that.
You don't want to see any of it, but that's also part of horror too, is you're just like, no, you know.
Yep.
I can guarantee you we will not have any humans dismembering cats or doing anything like that in this book. That's the hard and fast rule I have about not fucking with cats from that documentary I watched.
You know, and I didn't watch that doc because I don't think I can handle it, but I know the doc.
Yeah, it's hardcore.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to detour into the other doc discussions because I don't even have access yet, but...
Sure. Although the point of that one, Don't Fuck With Cats, is, I mean, the cat part looms large, but also it's just about, like, the internet tracking this fucking guy down, which I think is a great...
Right.
And it obviously hasn't worked out great for everyone, the doxing and the the mobs. But in this one case, the internet was like, fuck this guy. We're gonna find him. And they sure did. Yeah.
Just going back to seeing if there's anything else I had in mind. But honestly, if... I don't know where you're at on your time, but if you're good to wrap up, I don't know if I have anything else, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good. I got to go to a
break. Yeah, I don't know anything else in particular. Just...
Thank you guys so much for having me. This was a real thoughtful discussion, too. You guys had great questions and insights and stuff. So, it was very nice talking to you.
Well, hey, we appreciate hearing your thoughts on what you're working on. It's always fun for us to get the behind the scenes that, you know, everyone always gets to wonder what it's like creating these things. Some people maybe just read them carelessly, but Joe and I are incredibly fascinated with every ounce of this medium. So having the opportunity to talk to such a wide array of amazing creators in the industry has just been amazing. And so I'm really thankful you and through Image, we were able to get this set up.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, hit me up if you want to. If you want to look at future issues, and I'm happy to come back after the first arc or whatever, if you want to talk more about it or anything. I love talking about this stuff, and also have to continue talking about it so people don't forget that we're coming out. Hopefully that's not a problem. If we can do anywhere near the excitement that Stray Dogs had, we'll hopefully other people will sort of pick up the part where I have to constantly be reminding people that it's out there.
Right.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely. Well,
so yeah, before as we're wrapping up, do you want to just say anywhere people can find you online to keep up to date with you and your projects?
Yeah, I'm on all the social media. I think I'm on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and Blue Sky and Facebook, all that stuff. Just Tony Fleece, just search Tony Fleece. I have a website, tonyfleece.com, FLEECS. And you can buy original art there. You can get like exclusive covers there and stuff. And there's also a mailing list there you can sign up for. If you're on my mailing list, I'll always let you know, like, if there's new projects coming out or a sale or, you know, any one of these places you follow me, you'll definitely just hear about whatever new thing is coming out, because that's mostly what I do on social media, is just talk about, you know, it's my whole life is making these books right now. So it seems like I'm only promoting, but really I'm just talking about my life, which is only, you know, sometimes I'll go see a movie, and otherwise I'm just making these books. So
totally. Well, thanks again. And we're eager for folks to read this. I know that this will be coming out the day that everyone's picking up issue one. And hopefully we get news of a second print as soon as it hits shelves Wednesday morning.
Secretly we're working ahead on a cover, just in, fingers crossed, you know, trying to go into this with the best of intentions so that we're not, we don't find ourselves on our heels rushing to get something done. So.
Especially after, you know, 4 days to crunch on those other covers for Stray Dogs.
Yeah, we learned our lesson, hopefully.
Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for on this episode. I want to thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate and review the show 5 stars wherever you're listening. I would really appreciate it. If you want to keep up to date on new episodes, please subscribe. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, you can email the show at joetalkscomics@gmail.com. Additionally, if you need any back issues, ratio variants, core variants, or just anything in general, cool stuff to do with comics, you can check out the website for Beeders Thingamajiggets, the comic book store in Fort Collins, Colorado, that much of these comics worked at, and use JoeLovesComics at checkout to get 15% off. I don't get any money for that. It's just a cool thing for you to use if you want to, yeah, check out their site, and if you see anything that you like. You can find the podcast on Twitter at JoeTalksComics, and finally, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JoeLovesComics, where we can continue talking comics. That's all for now, and I hope to see you next time. Bye!